session number 25534, reel 4.
Maurice Lashbrook, reel 4.
And that one Sicily then was a choice. We had a lot of spare time and recreational periods, playing tennis and swimming and this way, which was lovely. And then I was on guard one night, the CO had been posted, been promoted and posted, and there was a big deal in the officer's mess. I was in charge of the guard, and one of the sentries came back to me and said, there's trouble in the officer's mess. And I said, I'll go over. The officer's mess was on the top floor of the administration block. We were in this enclosure, it used to be a French hospital. And the officer's mess was on the top floor above the admin block. And I went there, and there was fire buckets and sand buckets coming down the stairs and all sorts of things going on. And I thought, oh, well, they're still enjoying themselves, so it's up to them. I can't tell officers what to do. So I told the sentry, just keep an eye on it and make sure there's nothing serious going on. If there is, give me a shout at him. Well, in the early hours of the morning, about 5 o'clock, an ambulance arrived at the gates, and I said, what do you want? He said, we got a call for the officer's mess. So I said, well, I better come with you. I took them in, and they took an officer out on the stretcher. And I said, what's going on? Evidently, this officer had been killed. In the court of inquiry, it said he fell and knocked his head on the bars. But that was the story, but we heard different of what had gone on. The unit, the SIB, came in. That's the detectives of the military police.
Special investigations.
Special investigation branch. They came in and started digging. The CO was demoted and didn't go away. He was posted somewhere else. 3 officers were taken away and court-martialed. They found money missing from the impressed account. It was right from top to bottom. And the unit was disbanded, which I thought it should have been. Because I can never understand why some of the senior officers were wearing any beautifully made tailored suits. I can afford to buy those, you know. And everybody was on the floor. They were all on the floor. Anyway, from there, as I was getting near the end of my service in the Middle East, that was 4.5 years you had to go out there, I was sent down to Tel Kebir in Egypt, which is a big transit camp. Prior to that, I had a short leave of Alan Moore again in Tel Aviv, because he was in Palestine, so Haifa, and I went down there a holiday in Tel Aviv. And I went on down to Tel Kebir, and I was down there. They wouldn't send us home until we'd been there all 4.5 years. They were just hanging around in the transit camp. This was coming up towards the end of the war then.
Did you have much information of what was happening in the rest of the theatre in Europe?
Not a great lot. It was all kept quite quiet, especially out in Egypt. We didn't hear a lot. When the war finished. Because we were all confined to barracks. Yeah, must have been. Must have been about 45, wasn't it? I came home in 45, so it would have been about the end of the First World War, wouldn't it? Because we were confined to barracks. So I just did my 4.5 years of barracks. And then I was eventually shipped home. I shipped home and I went to Greenford in Middlesex. That's right. Another transit area. I thought, oh great, because the wife lived up just up the road. So we met up again, but she'd come home. She was in the ATS and she came home from Brussels. Went straight to the hospital, more or less. She came home, she was very ill. And I fetched the doctor and the first thing he said, I've only been on my leave. So I said, as he'd been on the day, you know. And he said, oh, well, she's not pregnant, and it's not that. anyway, she was put into hospital, and she had candle fever and all sorts of other things. She was really, really rough. and my embarkation leave had gone. So I saw Safa and they got it extended, but they wouldn't extend it anymore. She was in hospital, or 6 weeks in hospital, then she had gone convalescent, still in the ATS. And then I was posted up to Donington in Shropshire, the bigger, oh, it was a big, horrible base workshop. Huge place that was. Civilianised, you know, it was partly civilianised as well. And then I was in the sergeant's mess, sorting the sergeant's mess out. He gave me a job of sorting out the blood before I'd been fitted in the accounts. Now they're going to sort it out. And I did that, and then I managed a few weekends at home. And they said, right, you're on your way. And I was posted to Italy, the Central Mediterranean Forces. So I went to November 46. I went to Italy, a little place called Cervignano, lovely little Italian village in northern Italy. And it was nice there, I enjoyed it there for a short while. I remember we packed up and put all the unit on railway tracks and taken up to Germany in the BOR. We got up there and then we were disbanded. And we went to Brunswick, we were disbanded from there, and I went finished up in Rheinhammer headquarters in Bad Oeynhausen.
How destroyed was Germany?
It was flattened. We got to Hanover, the troops had bulldozed through the main street, cleared the rubble, so that transport could get through various streets. It stunk to high heaven. The Germans were scrounging, they were absolutely dead on the uppers. And eventually we employed German civilians, and they liked working for us because they had a midday meal given to them, which was, they had something to eat. But they were scrounging, they were bringing all the different things, trying to swap this for something else, and they were after coffee, and they were, I remember, we stopped with my friend one day and offered this one officer two eggs for some chocolate or something. They'd never eaten chocolate for years, so they wanted some chocolate. But that was a sort of black market thing that was starting up. But it was flat. I went to Hamburg around about that time, and there was nothing. You could see for miles and miles and miles, there was just nothing. And the rubble from Hanover town, they used to build a big sports stadium just on the outskirts of Hanover. And my wife joined me there in Bad Oeynhausen. We lived in the flat. She came out there in 46. And that was great. You know, we just got started again, you know. And then I was sent down to Austria to take over a light aid detachment down there, a small workshop called I was made WO2 then. I took over this workshop in Austria, which was the best coaching I ever had. I had a great bunch of boys. They'd do anything for me. Mine had a bit of a struggle at first, but they would do anything for me and my wife. For instance, we were at a dance one night with all the boys in one of the hotels. It was a leave centre. And this chap asked to dance with my wife, and I said, yes, of course you can. One of my lads came over and said, is he making ambition? And so I would take him out and do him for you. You know, they'd do anything for me. But they were great, and we had a wonderful 2 years down there. I mean, the wife went skiing and skating and went on all the trips round on the leave centre.
And did you find the locals difficult, or were they...?
No, they were lovely. They were lovely. We were in a flat in Hanover, after us. We were in a flat, the owner lived in the cellar. The owner of the house lived in the cellar, or block. There's two flats we were in one. Herbie was in the other. And he lived in the cellar with his wife. And no, he said, great, so you're maintaining my building, you're heating it, you're looking after it for me. Great. He said, no, you stay as long as you like. He said, I'm happy. And he finally got himself a job, and he used to look after the central heating. And used to tell me, please, Mr. Lashbrook, I must have cokes. We want me some coke for the boiler, you know. So, all right, now the rain's for a small coke to be delivered. The central heating, they had to, you know, report in and ask for it. And it was great. No, they were fine. And I joined the civilian workshop. The three of us ran a civilian workshop in Hanover, and there was 200 odd Germans, all Germans. And they were repairing army vehicles, British army vehicles. And the boss German, Herr Bremer, he was an ex, was it the elite, what they call them, the German army,
the Panzer SS? Or
SS, mm-hmm. He was in the SS. And I had long chats with him on the quiet. Why was he in the SS? He said, because I was a sportsman. He was a champion rower, and he won the German championship, right? So when his time came, he had to go into the SS, he had no option. And and I found them all very good, really. I mean, the bomber we had was a fighter pilot, ex-German fighter pilot, you know. We gradually sort of integrated, and I found them very hard-working. Mind you, we were weeding out some of the rats among us, because the SIB used to come in and special security people, and they used to want to see our register of employees, and they'd go down through them. Wait a minute. Will you take us around and show us around the workshop? So yeah, I used to take them around. They might come in one day as a captain, they might come in as a major the next day, or they might come in as a sergeant the day after. You know, they're all on these special security people. And we got to know them quite well, because we took half their vehicles too. And he came around, and we said, we went to a good inn. So I always remember where all the stuff was brought in. I was checked in, and this chap kept a register of all the things that came in the workshop. And he said, what's that chap's name? I said, I'll tell you when I get upstairs. I don't remember our hand, so I've got the register out. So, that's he should be back home tomorrow. So they came back the next tour and came back the next day, and said, we're going to pick him up now. And he's wanted for war crimes. He changed his name, and he was working in our workshop.
So they had a pretty good idea of who they were looking
they
for.
They knew, and they picked him up, and he denied, he saw you were Herr Schmidt or something, and he said, no, I'm not. So he said, got proof. I said, come on. Off he went, he didn't say anything more. But, I trained the Germans. They're very hard-working. If you said, look, I want this done, I want that done tomorrow, they'll get it done, you know. And I got quite friendly with quite a few of them. One or two, there was one there. When I was the boss, it was Hesse his name was. He was in charge of the blacksmiths. He could get anything, you wanted anything on the black market or anything, he'd get it. And one day, because in our flat we had a big chicken run, so I said, well, I'd go out and get some chickens, because the daughter was born in Hanover. And I said, I'll get on to Hesse. So I got on to him, I said, I want some chickens. Yes, how many do you want? Oh, I said, half a dozen. Six chickens, live ones. I said, laying eggs, Okay. And then a couple of days later, he says, I have your chickens. I said, well, you take them up to this, give them my address, put them up, put them in the pen. Oh, I got another six lovely white chicks. Again, I had a tin of coffee, or I forget what it was, but you get anything. Yeah. And, of course, I had my own car then. I bought a Volkswagen from somebody, one of the lads. And I had my own car, so we could get around. It was lovely then. We had freedom.
So how long were you there?
I was in Germany for 8 years, I think. I came back home, in May 55 I came home. That was, about 8 years I was there, including 2 years in Oxford.
And where were you posted then?
I went there. I sent another little story if I may tell you that. While I was in Hanover, Alan was stationed in a small workshop close to us. They came under our jurisdiction. And he had to do everything through me, Alan did, so he one day ran out and said, look, his officer had taken the Volkswagen out and crunched it while he was on the leaves. Can you fix it? Because he didn't have the facilities to do it. So I said, of course I will, So we got it in the workshop, and I fiddled the worksheet and all the rest of it, and got it completely repaired. And then I took it back to him, they came and collected it. And he thanked me very much, this officer did, because it saved him a court-martial. He was in court martial, because he'd been out on the booze with the army car and doing things he shouldn't have done and smashed it up and went in. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I tried to come home and I got a posting through the Woolwich. And I thought, I don't want to go to London or Woolwich, I wish I'd have gone somewhere else. then I got a letter from this officer who was then in the postings department in England. He was, you know, dealing with all the postings. I remember your name, thank you for what you did for me, where would you like to go? Turn up this letter when you finish. So I wrote back to this particular address he'd given me, and she said, all right. I said, I'd like to go in the West Country, anywhere in the West Country. So the posting was changed from Woolwich. The sheriff sent for me, he said, the posting's been changed. He said, you're going to Interstow in North Devon, which was an underwater establishment where they were dealing with taking trucks underwater and for offloading from landing craft and all this sort of thing. They had a waterproof.
Very interesting work.
Oh yeah, so that was nice. I had to write, we used to get a brand new vehicle issued, and we'd get one sample, and it would come into us, and we had to waterproof it, and I used to have to write the instruction book up. Then they'd come in, some troops would come in. I'd give them the instruction book and all the materials, and they had to carry it, my instructions, and waterproof it. Then it was put on a landing craft and brought ashore in the water, you know, 8 foot of water. And yeah, it was interesting, yeah. Great fun sometimes.
Did you have any failures?
Oh, yes, yeah. Oh, yes, you know. Invariably, it was like they hadn't done something properly, you know, they'd skipped a bit.
Did you use a similar system that they used for the D-Day landings with the rubber skirts?
That's right, yeah, and extension exhaust pipes and all this, and explosive bolts on the tanks are where the air exhaust or air intake for them to put a funnel over them, and it's clamped over the bolts, and the driver or the commander of the tank would then blow off, explode the bolts, and all this stuff used to drop off, and then they carry on. And do all that sort of thing, but we just have to recover stuff in the water, underwater, and yeah, it was great fun. We had wetsuits we wore, and the first trip I did, off the landing craft, the boys, all the lads out of my team, they got a hold of my wetsuit, didn't they? They made a hole in the crutch. Well, I didn't know. I got in there and I was on this vehicle coming ashore, yeah. That's funny, my feet are wet. And I was going to fill it up with water by that seat, you know. Yeah, that was my first trip ashore from a landing craft. Then I was demobbed from there. After 25 years and a few days.
And what did that feel like? Was that voluntary, or it was...?
Partly voluntary. They were cutting down on the forces. Of a section body or something like that. They were reorganising everything. Then we were offered a lump sum, I forget what it was, but we were offered a lump sum and a full pension to go to make way for younger and more people. I'd been 25 years and I was an old man then, you know. And because while we were in Germany, we did a lot of exercises, you know, a lot of manoeuvres. We spent the weeks on end, you know. And was all reorganising the whole British Army for all the future campaigns and that sort of thing. But I enjoyed it in service. But the biggest thing I think is I missed the comradeship. I missed the friends. Well, I still have all of them, because they got married and I was best man at his wedding. And you know, it was great. He was best man at my wedding. And you miss the day-to-day. I found when I went to work in the civilian workshop, everybody was secretive. They didn't want you to see what they were doing and give us their pay packet. And I thought, no, I'm more, I used to be more motivated, you know, friendly. But it took a little getting used to it. But I got over it. I got a job in a workshop in Boston Superman. And then I went into, well, then I immigrated to Australia for 2 years. We went out there, they lost all the contracts where I was. They were doing all army vehicles. Henry was limited, they lost all the contracts. It was all political. They decided to move all the contracts to up north somewhere. So that was silly because they were getting excellent stuff from Boston. And so there's no jobs. I mean, they were made redundant and we got a week's pay, you know. And we decided to go to Australia. So we. I got a job before I went with the Department of Supply, which is again on the military vehicle side, and we went out to a workshop opening in Melbourne for 2 years, but we didn't like it. My daughter's education stood still the whole time she was there, because she was at grammar school in Weston, very good, and she was doing very well. And she'd done all the work out there 2 years before, you know, she was 2 years ahead of everything. Because we came back, she went back and got her back into grammar school, and she finished up, she got, it was 8 O levels, 3 A levels, and got a degree in mathematics in the end, you know. So she was a good kid, she worked hard. She's now married with 2 children, 5 horses, and she was so right, lovely, not far from us.
And can you tell me what your wife did in the ATS, that she was in Brussels?
Yeah, she was. She joined the ATS, and she was in Shrewsbury Nursing Home area with the military police, clerical, you know, purely clerical. And then she went over to Monkeys HQ in Brussels.
They were
in this hotel, built in this hotel. That was a hotel, which the Germans had used. And there was a complete meal laid out in the cellar, or downstairs in the dining room. The complete meal laid out, and they'd all upped and gone, you know, left it. So, a rough time there, you know, for about a fortnight, just before the end of the war, you know. It was a bit rough, but then it was all quiet and down, and then when I came home, she came home. Yeah, she was ATS, she was clerical. She wanted to go into Wren's, but there was no vacancies, you know, so she went in the ATS.
And
didn't tell me.
She was married at the time?
Yes, we were married, yeah. She wanted to go. I didn't know anybody until she told me that she was in. we're still friendly with Joan. I've lost quite a lot of my mates now. I've lost quite a lot of them because I lost Alan. I've only got one left now, that's Vernon. Major Carswell. He's up in Reading. He's still up with Vernon, but he's gone blind now. He's not very good. I've got Fred Curry in Exeter. He's still going. And one or two of the other boys from Felton. But Vic's gone. There's quite a few gone now. Hatch is gone. He went this last year. But,
got some good memories.
Got some lovely memories. Yeah, I've got some wonderful memories. I've got some bad memories, you know. I find that when we go on these pilgrimages, I can take it all. It's emotional. But it's when we go out to the road. Because it all comes back. You can, the first time I went, it was horrific. Ray Gancock, she was the lady organised it. Her father, I knew Hutch, Ray organised it. She was with me. And we had the service at the over there where the boy is. And we had the service in the paper. They released. And it was funny because when we went out, a dolphin, or a porpoise, whichever it is, circled our ship with a survivor thing, all the way up to the wreck. And it stayed with us. And went off, and only just our ship. It was weird. We didn't know, but people saw it, that were in another ship. Saw it, you know, what's it said, our ship, Slava's ship.
Very symbolic.
Yeah, very symbolic, yeah. But, I've bottled it up for so long. And that first trip was really harrowing. But it's getting better as we go along, you know. Not quite so bad, but it still hits you hard. And the weather was the same, it was, the sun was just sort of hazy sunshine, the calm water. And we were just waiting for the bombers to come over, you know. We don't talk about it a lot. We do amongst ourselves a bit, you know. But, it's nice to go about, meet up. We all meet up in Portsmouth at the Royal Naval Club here. We all made a flood, drove me down this time because I can't drive too much, too far. So I drove down to here, and then Fred took me down to Portsmouth. He's young, he's only 82. You know, he's quite fit still, Fred. So he's a lot of operations. And we all meet up in the club and we have a sort of big social evening and get together first night, have a meal there, and then we catch the ferry the next morning and off we go. Same coach drivers, they all volunteer, you know. Yeah, oh no, we'll come next year, you know, that's lovely, you know, we enjoy it. Yeah, it's great fun. Well, good point. We enjoy ourselves, but we still remember them.
I think we've finished on that note. Thank you very much for speaking to me and sharing it with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.